So today, my talk is called The Importance of Session. So I am going to session next week. And in case anybody here is not familiar with that term, it is the Zen term for a multiple day, 24/7, residential meditation retreat, silent retreat. I'm going to Rohatsu session at Great Vows and Monastery. Several Sangha members are also going. And it's Rohatsu session in December is done by Zen groups and monasteries and whatever all over the world. And because it's supposedly the Buddha, it celebrates the Buddha's enlightenment, and supposedly he was enlightened on December 8th. I mean, of course, that's a kind of a, random but agreed upon date to celebrate. So the session is meant to coincide with that. So I'm going to talk about session and make the point, hopefully, that there is much you will not understand about Zen unless you do session. But the tricky thing about talking about session is that not everyone wants to do it. Not everyone can do it. So I'm going to be talking about that. And what, it could be that today's talk ends up seeming irrelevant to you or kind of alienating or discouraging, depending on your whole relationship to this. Do you even, want to explore this practice? Do you want to do it, but there's obstacles, which mean you can't do it? Or you just kind of I'm not really interested. Who knows? So hopefully just bear with me and you'll get something out of this. One thing, session is challenging. It requires time, right? And there's many folks with jobs that they have very limited vacation time. And it's either you take that family vacation or you go on session, and your family's going to have something to say about that. So limited time, right? You may not have the time or flexibility to do it. It can be expensive. We try to keep our own session, which is in April, at a minimum cost, but we have to rent a place and, make food and all that. Great Vow, where I'm going, they have very reasonably priced session, but then you also might be taking time off of work, right? And you're paying for session. And I am paying a lot of money to have my dogs and birds boarded while I'm away, right? I'm paying more than the session costs for that to happen. So, there's expenses, it's also very physically challenging. So the schedule of session, which I'll talk a little bit about, involves sitting Zazen for at least 8 hours a day. You don't sit it straight, right? You get up and do Kinhin and you break it up with chanting and work and, eating and rest and things like that. You're not sitting solidly, but by the end of the day, you will have sat for that long. And it hurt when I was 24 and I started, and now I'm 54 and it hurts more. But in some ways, sometimes it's surprising. It doesn't hurt as much as you might think. You might think, just especially because, it starts to kind of hurt over the couple of days, and you think, oh my God, if this continues, no way. But it kind of plateaus. Doesn't really get any worse, or I find by the end of the day, parts of my body are screaming. And then the next morning, it's kind of start fresh. Anyway, it can be challenging. If you have health issues, myriad different kinds of health issues are going to be challenged by this. Chronic pain, back issues, whatever. Sometimes you have physical ailments that mean that you really need to stick close to home, more or less. So there are many obstacles, or you have, you know, responsibilities. You have responsibilities to kids and to your job and to dependent parents or whatever. So there's many, many reasons why you may not be able to do session or do it often or whatever. But I do want to point out that it's a feature of modern Western and particularly progressive culture, of which most of us fit within that, we kind of have a value of radical egalitarianism. We do not want to hear that this might be a valuable thing to do if not everybody can do it. Not everybody has equal access to it, right? We're like, that is, we don't want to hear that. So I want us to just kind of be aware of that, you know, strongly held value and to question it a little bit. Like there are things that are very valuable to do, which aren't necessarily equally accessible to everyone. So I'm going to talk about why session is important. And then I will wrap up with like, so what do you do, you know, depending on your relationship to it? You know, what do you do if you can't go or you can't go as often? Or I'll talk about participating via the Cloud Sendo. So Uchiyama Roshi, so I turn to this Uchiyama Roshi's Opening the Hand of Thought. He has a section on session. He says, the word session means to touch or listen to the mind. I mean, I don't know that for myself. I'm just taking his word for it. To touch or listen to the mind. So, you know, the monastery where I'm going for Rahatsu, they do a session every month. So that's like 12, and they're usually at least 5 days long. And Rahatsu is generally, they do have one longer. They have a 10-day session in October, but Rahatsu's, you know, goes from Sunday evening, be there tonight, and then it'll wrap up next Sunday morning. So that's Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday. So the 6 full days, full, you know, dawn till dusk, the schedule. And, you know, definitely the second day or so, you can't stay awake. Body is aching. It's going to be like, you know, how many full days left? It always feels, I look forward to it. I dread it. I mean, I've been doing this for 30 years. It's a little bit like, you know, and it's funny because you tell people you're going to go on a retreat and like, oh, that sounds nice and relaxing. And like, I mean, it's a little bit like, I imagine like running a marathon, you know, where you might be kind of psyched for the experience as a whole. But on the other hand, you know, like, it's going to be hard. Glad you did it at the end, right? Generally, it's very rare that somebody does this and they're like, that was a waste of time. Most people find it very impactful. So the structure of it is that once we arrive tonight, so I'll tell it kind of like in real time. So we'll arrive, get settled, register, pay our session fee, you know, whatever, get our eating bowls. And then that will formally begin, you know, like 7 p.m. or something. And after that, there's no talking. There's no eye contact. There's no like social interaction at all. You do meet with a teacher once a day. So, you know, you, in case, you know, there's something really going on, you do have somebody you can talk to, right? There's always, you're always taken care of. There are people in charge and you can talk to them if you are having issues or something. But the practice is to just, you know, there's not going to be any, you know, ordinarily we're looking around and are we okay? Or, you know, hey, thank you, excuse me, whatever, we're interacting. But all of those things are, we let go of. When we go, we obviously, we've left all of our activities behind. You know, I leave my pets. I leave my accordion. I leave my husband. I leave Netflix. I leave gin and tonics. I leave my garden. I leave, I don't know, you all. I leave all of the, I leave my computer. I leave my podcast writing. I leave all of that stuff that makes my life full and enjoyable and that, you know, I derive pleasure from, leave all of that behind. So we're just, I mean, and the request is that we not read either. And we, that's what I ask people to do at our session as well. Some people cheat, but you can't, and we're not going to surveil your rooms, but anyway, that, you know, so you're encouraged to not even read or journal or anything. So basically you just have zazen, you have eating, you have work, you have walking around with a cup of tea, you have napping, you have a shower. It's amazing how these things are just like, I'm going to take a shower after lunch. Like, this is like the main event of your day. You usually don't have as nearly as much privacy as you would like. There's, you know, you're in a communal setting. You're provided with food. It may or may not be the food that you would prefer. It's usually not very fancy. It's vegetarian. You know, sleeping arrangements. You can often hear somebody else snoring. So it's a temporary renunciation, right? It's like, it's temporarily, essentially, we are taking up the monastic practice that the Buddha had his monks and nuns do. So then there's that schedule or 8 hours a day. So tomorrow morning, I believe the bell will ring at 3:50 a.m. and by 4:30, we should be seated in the zendo, and we'll sit for 2 hours and we'll do chanting and then we'll have breakfast. And oh, sometimes morning works for me, sometimes nope. You know, it's great, it's just great. Sometimes it's like, yes, and sometimes it'll just be the first hour. I'd be like, I am so cool, you know, and then the second, I'll just be like, I mean, and I will be even while chanting with the chant book, I will be falling asleep while chanting. It sometimes it's just like the sleep bug just bites and there's just no fighting it. And yet you have to fight it. You have to sit upright and endure. It cannot be fun sometimes. Then you have a little tiny break after breakfast, and it's a formal meal. We do Orioki formal meals, which is a whole nother topic. And then we have silent work practice. So we might be, you know, you just get assigned a task. You might be cleaning toilets or you might be chopping carrots. Then a little break and more zazen, lunch. There's a rest period after lunch, which is, you know, I just sleep. Like I don't shower during session. It's just sleeping. Any opportunity is sleeping. So then we go into the zendo for a dharma talk and more zazen. There's a buffet dinner, break after dinner, and then a lot more zazen in the evening. And then one really obnoxious thing at Rohatsu is that they encourage you to sit more. It's called yaza. It's called sitting after everything, like, you know, end of the evening. And I used to be like young and ambitious and And it was great. And like, and it can be great. And people at you know, our session will sometimes do that without being coaxed. And there's something really beautiful and wonderful, right? About the lights get turned down. Everything is so quiet. And you're just sitting, you know, voluntarily. There's something very sweet about it. Nobody's going to be ringing a bell to end it. You just kind of sit into the night. But, you know, at Rahatsu, they do a lot of like encouraging. There's a group of people that'll be sitting up later every night, an hour later every night. And then on Friday night, they sit up all night. And so, you know, when the wake up bell rings in the morning, you know, they get up and, you know, brush their teeth and get ready to come back into the Zendo for more zazen. And afterwards, you know, at the end of session, people are checking in. They'll talk about how just amazing that experience was. Just like, you know, they did it. They sat up all night and like, I don't know, it really is a meaningful experience for some people. You know, I definitely, you know, vast majority of us, and I'm definitely one of them, even though I'm seated right at the front, inner row, right up in the altar and like, right where everybody can see me. And like, so if I don't do yaza, everybody can see that I don't do yaza. But I'm like, already sat for like 8.5 hours out of here. Like seriously? I mean, what we're doing, just what we're doing at the straight session, most people that we know would think we were insane. And now they're saying, like, I'm kind of implying it's not enough. Like, if you're really dedicated, you'd be sitting even more. Like, so anyway, and we really, like, we're setting aside, this is in a way that Sesshin is kind of like zazen on steroids, right? What we do in a zazen period, which is set down all of our activities, try to let go of trying to figure anything out or fix anything or plan anything, and just be for that half an hour or that hour. We're essentially trying to do this for like 5-6 days. And we set aside all our life activities, and it is quite transformative. It contains all kinds of experiences, bliss and insight, misery, boredom, irritation, emotions welling up, sleepiness, alertness, physical pain, transcendence of physical pain, peace and satisfaction. There is a value to the physical challenge. So sometimes people are like, why would we torture ourselves like this? Why so much and so long and like whatever? Why not just sit when it's, you know, it's going well and it doesn't hurt? I'm going to say the value of the physical challenge. I'm not going to say that like you must experience this physical challenge. You know, it's not something you necessarily have to sign up for. But the value of it is described beautifully by Uchiyama Roshi here. When we do zazen, we fold our legs and sit without moving, keeping perfectly still. So you would have to say it is painful compared with a self-indulgent way of life in which we are usually able to move around as we wish. However, if we begin to think during zazen about how painful it is and how we are persevering and bearing that pain, we will never be able to sit quietly throughout the whole 5 days. We might be able to do a couple hours of zazen, or even 4 or 5, strictly on our ability to persevere and endure pain, but there's no way we could ever sit a 5-day session simply by persevering. Furthermore, we could never sit through a session every single month or lead a life of zazen practice by some egotistical idea about our ability to endure pain. And even if we were able to do so, it would be utterly meaningless. The most important thing during session is to throw away even these ideas of how painful it is or how we are persevering amid pain and become submerged in Zazen as it is, as the self doing itself by itself. Only by sitting still and leaving everything up to the posture will time pass of its own accord. Only when we throw away our ideas of pain and perseverance will we be able to sit a session without anxiety. This has enormous influence in our daily lives. We meet many problems and misfortunes in our day-to-day affairs, but what usually happens is that in confronting a problem, we begin to struggle. So he talks about how it's a very useful practice to learn how to endure. So oftentimes in the a session, we'll have like an arc of development. And it's helpful to go talk to a teacher during this, because sometimes you're just like, oh, you know, and they'll be like, you get familiar with how it goes. So there's often what they call a hump day. So, you know, we're starting on Sunday night. So it could be Tuesday, it could be Wednesday, who knows, it could be any day. Or it's just like, oh, I think I gotta go. Like, what, this is insane practice. This is just painful. I'm just tired. I'm just whatever. But it's like we have to kind of let go of our sense of time, just and surrender. And like on the other side of that hump day, oftentimes people it just becomes like easy and natural. And it feels like this is how people should live all the time. Mm-hmm. It just feels like it feels so much more sane than our usual way, right? Of kind of running around and everything's discombobulated. And so inevitably our mind slows down. I mean, even if you think it hasn't, it has. It's all relative, right? I have a very busy mind, so it rarely feels like, yes. But relatively speaking, my mind has slowed down. And we feel just greater awareness and appreciation for each thing, for the food that we're eating silently at our meals, or, you know, taking a walk and feeling the breeze, drinking a cup of tea. I feel like my Zen practice is, I could paint you kind of a mosaic of my practice, and each piece would be the image of a piece of floor or wall from all the different places that I've sat session, right? And it becomes the most beautiful, perfect, complete thing. Just so I have this image in my mind, a great vow now has this beautiful yellow bamboo floor, you know, and there'll be sunlight on it. So I just have this, and it makes me just feel, it brings back the feeling, just being like, just being there, just being so completely with this image of this piece of carpet, this wall that I, you know, little faces will appear in or something. And so eventually what we are cultivating the circumstances for is quiet mind. So when, and this, you know, it can be fleeting. It's not like I've achieved quiet mind in this session and from here on out, I will have quiet mind. We wish, right? But maybe it's just one Zazen period in the evening, or maybe it's just 5 minutes or something. But a quiet mind where you really get a sense of like, it's not that those thoughts are absent, but they're just like, I wonder what's for lunch. I mean, they've slowed down enough that you kind of notice each one and you can let it just kind of go on by, and it's not troubling. And then some point, perhaps, actually the silent mind, just sitting and your mind is fully engaged. And then that is where, you know, we've created these conditions for samadhi, or I don't know, non-dual awareness, which is not something we can force. My teacher said it's like making a lap for a cat. And sometimes the cat comes and curls up in your lap. And then if you try to grab it, it'll go. So, because as long as I am trying to do anything, non-dual awareness is going to elude me, right? If it's prefaced on a sense of I, if it's prefaced on a dualistic sense of I'm looking for a state that I don't have right now, then it's gone. But this, you know, in that silent mind, sometimes that just, it's like it feels a little bit like you lose control of your mind, but not in like a way that it's like it's going to rampage and, you know, that kind of thing. It's just you are not in charge of it anymore. And therefore, what you perceive is not limited by your preconceived notions either. So you can really just, that's when real kind of insight and change in perspective can happen, when it's, you know, we're that open and receptive. So you wouldn't say, like, this is what is so frustrating about session, is like, well, aren't we all sitting there trying to achieve samadhi? I mean, come on, aren't we? Surely this is the point. And like, why else would you sit hour after hour after hour, even when it's grueling, if it didn't have a point? And yet, like, we can't strive for it. That's not the point, right? Samadhi comes and goes. So like, we also have to be trying to just be like our zazen is, right? And just let things unfold and not be grasping or striving. And I feel like we kind of go off, you know, on either side, right? We'll kind of strive and then we'll just be like, whatever, you know, kind of give up. And then we're kind of slack and wasting our time and just, you know, our mind's wandering and we're just dozing off. And, you know, it's kind of like, come on, you know, I didn't like spend this money to board my dogs and birds so I could just sit here and plan my next podcast, right? So how do we show up? So this really allows us to see what zazen can be. So it's very helpful in that usually when we go back to our lives, we can bring a little bit of what we tasted sometimes, but then it changes. Like, life is busy, the mindfulness, the stillness, whatever, it just becomes a memory of what happened during session. But it does let us see kind of, oh, that's what, you know, for me, it feels like discovering over and over, oh, that's what just sitting is. Oh, okay. Right. Like, and it shows you the next level, which then you can be cultivating in your everyday sitting in life. And it, you know, it may not feel like you're making that progress, but, you know, over many, many, many years, many, many session, the difference between session and life becomes to feel a lot less. I remember feeling very, very kind of sad and traumatized in a way where I loved this space of session. And then now it's over and I just have to go back into that, you know, crazy world and my own crazy brain. But now it feels less. I mean, obviously it is a special circumstance, but I also am more just familiar with all the things that I encounter there, and it's more integrated into my life. So if you want to do session and there's no serious obstacle for you, I encourage you. Our session is, we have one session a year. This in 2026 will be April 21st, Tuesday evening, April 21st through Sunday morning, April 26th. They're also, like I said, Great Vow has a monthly session, Dharma Rain. Those of you who are elsewhere, there might be a, you know, Zendo within reasonable driving distance where you could go participate. If you have done session before, but you've let it become a lower priority in your life, I encourage you to try to do at least two a year. You know, one is great. I mean, at least one, that's super. I encourage you to try to do two. Obviously more would be cool, but you know, most people can't. If you don't want to do session, then that's fine. All aspects of Zen are beneficial. So, you know, I don't know what kind of feelings might be coming up. If you're not interested, I don't feel, you know, inadequate or resentful or defensive or anything like that. Just say, if it comes up, I hope that you know, you'll be able to just say, I'm not interested in session at this time. And I hope that all of us as Sangha will just let that be, right? Like, not, because we can end up with a just kind of a creepy culture of pressuring people to practice in a certain way. And, you know, that's just not helpful. But at the same time, if you're not interested, and this seems just kind of like the description of some strange Zen practice that you didn't picture yourself ever doing, you know, maybe just be kind of inspired and challenged by the fact of session. It's kind of like, I'm inspired by, you know, fully ordained Buddhist monastics who just, you know, never touch money and only eat once a day and like live their lives according to that traditional discipline. There's part of me that is inspired by that, that tells me like there's something really important going on here, right? So if you want to do session, or at least are intrigued but have obstacles, so like I said, financial obstacles can be substantial. We so far with our session, even though we have to rent a place and we pay per person and we have to buy food and all that, we have just, you know, adopted a pay what you can thing. And then some people will pay more and it's always worked out. So I encourage you to, you know, think about that. Joining us for session. And even those of you in the cloud, we've had cloud people just, you know, fly in for that. And especially if you need financial help, because, you know, now you're paying for travel and all that. And we find a place for you to stay and we get you to session too. So keep that in mind. Health issues, like I said, certainly there are ones that would mean, you know, participating in person isn't possible, but talk to me about attending ours and we might be able to come up with a plan that works. I'm just like, you know, that value I said of like, you know, radical egalitarianism. I'm just like, no way should somebody be deprived of being able to do so shit, right? Like, come on. Like, so, you know, there's some people that might need to do reclining meditation. They might need to get more sleep, that kind of thing. You know, and I feel like the session is difficult for everybody. And so, you know, we're not going to have conversations about like, well, you think sitting that long every day sounds really intimidating. Well, you sit for half the time. Just sit when you feel like it, right? But I think anybody who's signing up for session is signing up to be challenged. So we can talk about what would be possible. And a lot of times when people do get those accommodations, they find that they can do more than they expect. And we do have, if you are 60 or older, you can, you know, arrive an hour later in the morning or leave an hour early at night. That's the Silver Dragon option, say. If you are 70 or over, you get the Golden Dragon option. And you can do both if you want. And I think if you're 80 or over, you can do whatever you want. Just, yeah, the Platinum Dragon, just come attend what you can, you know? Like, and I think people would understand, right? We're doing our own practice. And to have people there who are, you know, have additional challenges and yet are trying to show up in whatever way they can, would just be inspiring. So please talk to me about that. You know, but then there are responsibilities, limited vacation time, family, pets. It's amazing how often pets get in the way, either young pets or ailing pets. My dogs are getting older and I don't know how long I'm going to be, you know, can you ask somebody to babysit your dog? It's like, they might pee all over your house and you got to give them medication every 3 hours. And you're like, I don't know. We'll see. But dependent parents, whatever. So, but I just invite everybody to challenge yourself with the old saying, where there's a will, there's a way. Obviously, that's not, it's, you know, we shouldn't beat ourselves up with that. And yet sometimes it is true. When people, I mean, I this is true of me as well. When I say I don't have time to, what I really mean is I have other priorities. And sometimes our priorities, like, you know, maybe you are, instead, you're at a job that you can't get flexibility with because it pays better and you're really, you know, you want to build up your wealth. Maybe you are, you know, you have hobbies or you're traveling or something like that. And it doesn't, you know, your schedules don't match with the opportunity to do session. So this isn't about being judgmental, but just inviting you to be honest with yourself. You know, session is about the great matter of life and death. How do you want to have lived? But obviously there's going to be too many obstacles sometimes. You live nowhere near session. Serious health issues mean you have to be at home, commitments. So you can participate via the Cloud Zendo. We have it. Great Vow has it as well. There's other Upaya is opening their Rohatsu to that kind of participation. So you would be trying to follow that schedule, that retreat schedule in your home, and then just, you know, tuning in to the retreat. And it can be hard. I mean, if it's hard to keep the schedule when you've got like the positive peer pressure of everybody, you know, in three dimensions and you're at home and you can just like, yeah, I'm not going to show up for that period or whatever. I'll turn my camera off and just like, you know, lay down or, but on the other hand, even though that's the difficulty, that can also be the pro, right? So if you do have health issues or whatever, you have responsibilities, you can just work them in as works for you. Especially if you need to, like, you know, lay down or rest more often or whatever. And you can, yeah, fold in your responsibilities. It can be very sweet. And so I know there's people who have done, attended our session via the cloud before and found it very, you know, challenging, but also very meaningful. There's something very sweet about actually doing it in your home, right? Creating the space of retreat in your home. We also have our continuous practice retreat, which is in October, where people deliberately make a kind of a more of a space of retreat in their life. We have a retreat schedule that people can participate in, Dirt, Zendo, and Cloud, but also people can, you know, maybe you go offline for the week, except for, you know, attending on the cloud. You know, you don't read the news. Maybe you set aside entertainments. Maybe you, you know, do all your shopping so you don't have to, you know, go shopping or go on errands for that week. Or there's various ways you can simplify your life and make it more of a mindful retreat. Yeah, I'll leave it there. So any, you know, comments or questions, reactions, or testimonials, Alan?
It does sound very challenging, difficult, and especially you have to not do your work or the pets, whatever. So I was thinking, add a little excitement to it. Do you know any tradition that combines the seeing with fasting? That you're gonna get, you're getting not only your spiritual awakening, but also there's a lot of health benefits that can add to.
No, I'm not aware of that.
Yes, you don't want
to do like torture.
You don't want the starting like never done it before. Obviously,
right, right.
You start like 1 day, 3 days, 5 days, or 7 days.
I mean, it looks, honestly, it's some of the residents at Great Bow eat very little sometimes, but frankly, like it is the food is the only exciting thing of the whole day, right? Like the grueling, I've just spent like 2 hours just trying to stay upright. Enchilada, casserole, you know, like, so it is, it feels like a little, I mean, but you know,
yeah,
you might have a good point, but a lot of times that's the only like pleasure that we get the whole day.
So I've been practicing like one meal a day for a couple of weeks, and also 42 hours fasting.
Wow.
And then I'll see if I can, well, just a suggestion.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you would, that would certainly be an option for you if you wanted to do that.
But obviously, you're doing fasting, everybody's eating. That doesn't sound too exciting.
You know. let's see. James, then Greg, then Yoli.
He asked for testimonials, so. I've come to realize that for me at least, and maybe for many others, sesshin actually starts months before the actual start date, and not because I might be involved with any planning or anything, but like that mindset of I'm going to go into this container and that mental preparation, if you will, for going there. And then definitely like that week before, that mental like, oh, what am I doing? Why am I doing this? You know, and like, you know, getting to sesshin and getting to that hump day and all of that type of thing is one obviously very concentrated aspect of that, letting go of my habit energies and letting go of my preferences. But that actually starts even before sesshin, because I'm already thinking about, oh my God, I can't believe I'm going to sit for that many hours. Why did I sign up for this? Like, I'm already doing that, wrestling with my ego, or wrestling with my habit energies even before I even get there, you know? So a big testimonial for you know, the fact that sesshin does actually extend even maybe a week or two or a month prior to the actual start date, because you're already working with that aspect of your small mind, you know, before you even get there. But as far as what you had said about Yaza, I resisted. I've sesshin is like, I can't. I've already sat, like you said, like sat hours and hours and hours. I can't do it. And at our last sesshin in April, I said, okay, I'm going to do it. I got to do this. I, you know, what, just like you said, there's like this, this not stigma, but like, well, I'm a serious Zen practitioner. I should be able to do yas. Come on. And I did. And you were there and a couple of others were there. And, you know, on the last night, so I already had been through all of the many days and all of the hours of sitting. And here I am sitting up one more, you know, session, however long it was going to go. And I will put in a plug for it. That was the most meaningful Zazen session I had. The entire session was sitting just for that last, I sat and I think, and you know, whatever, felt good. And I'm like, okay, my knees are starting to hurt. I'm going to get up. I resisted for a while. I was like, knees are hurting, man. I can sit. Finally, like, all right, I need to get up. And then I looked at the clock and I realized I had sat for an hour and a half straight without moving. I'm like, how in the world did I do that? Like, I can't do that normally. But it was just so, there was so much absorption in that moment. And then when I got up and I decided to just walk Keening and just, you know, just with the peripheral vision, seeing the people who were still there. And just like you said, that quiet and that calm, it was literally the most impactful moment of the entire session. And I was just, I'm doing Kenyan and I've just got tears streaming down my face because it was just so beautiful and so wonderful. And after the fact, I thought, how could that be all the hours of sitting and all of the pain and all of the, you know, preferences coming up, it's like, oh, it sucks. You want to go home? And I'm like, how could that be the most beautiful part of the entire session? It's like, and it's like you said, it's transformative. It's truly transformative. So.
Yeah, you're making me think of the word samadhi power. And so they say over the course of the retreat, not only do we build up that samadhi power on our own, but communally as well. And like you were saying, this kind of preparation, like Rahatsu is the most, it's like the biggest deal. This is the retreat everyone shows up to. So this session is completely full. There's going to be like 65, 70 people there. And like tonight, there will be in that luminous yellow zendo, like 70 people just like complete silence. And it's like, it's already there, right? It's already, you already feel that energy. Greg.
Hey, you were talking about the utility of doing a session from home too, for people who can't attend. And I personally attend at least two in-person sessions per year, and then Brightway offers a lot of one-day retreats that I tend to do at home online with all of you. But there are some days, some months of the year that Brightway offers those single-day Zazen Kai or one-day retreats that I can't make it. I just want to put in a plug, like maybe this is obvious to people, but like there doesn't have to be a session or a retreat happening that day for you to follow the schedule by yourself in your house that day either. I do that a few times a year. The months that I can't make the one-day retreats or the Zazen Kais that that Brightway is offering, I'll just print out the schedule from that month that everyone else sat together and just do it at home. And it's like just really a beautiful, like unusual situation. I only live with one other person, my wife. We don't have kids or anything, so it's usually pretty easy to manage. I pick a day that she's going to be working along a lot of hours, and I just sit all day long and follow a retreat schedule. So it's definitely a really fascinating and beautiful experience. So I highly recommend trying that out from time to time.
Thank you.
I also want to talk about the humanity that happens at Sesshin, right? how we're all in this space that's supposed to be sacred and people's stomachs are growling. I I had to go home briefly during the last session and I could hear toilets flushing. I could hear people farting in the bathroom. And the whole time I was there, I kept thinking, where is there going to be a private bathroom so that I could poop, right? So these are the thoughts that go through my head. And I just felt like, even though it was supposed to be strangered afterwards, when we all got together and we checked in, it's like, we're all the same. Because everybody was looking for that bathroom. Everybody got constipated. Everybody had to leave at one point to a fart. So it was just, it just made it even, I think, just that more special to know that here we are basically going into this thing where it feels very sacred and very special and peaceful, but yet we're still so human. And we're all the same, almost. So anyways.
Thank you. Thank you for reminding me of that. And how, even though we're not interacting in the ordinary social ways, right? We're all still like, we're doing the same thing at the same time and showing up. And it actually feels very, very intimate. And particularly the people you sit next to in the Zendo, even if you don't even know them, right? And you get to know, like, they're probably going to be late after lunch, you know, like, I just, these, and then we end session with a closing circle where everybody, you know, says something about their experience. And it's just like, yeah, it's amazing to hear from this person even sitting next to you in silence, right? And like, just how, indeed, how human. Because you can look out and you can think, oh, everybody's so calm and deep in samadhi, you know, and I'm the one sitting here just thinking about the bathroom, right? And then you find out, no. Ember.
Hi, thanks. I wondered, in the UK, we're in a different time zone, obviously, and in Europe. So when it was the continuous practice retreat, obviously we're asleep for some of it and, could only do so much. So I just had a question, and if this is a bit random and forgive me. I just wondered, has anybody ever proposed in the UK for people to get together and do our own session? Could we do it at the same time as, you know, the one in Portland, Oregon? We hired like an Airbnb or something, or do we need a teacher or a Zen center? That's my question.
Look, there's a little heart from you in. Simon likes to go on retreat. Like, I think that's a brilliant idea. And, you know, even if maybe you did it online, one of the things that we've done is, at the very least for like our Zazen Kai, we've had somebody on the East Coast gets up at like, you know, and starts the sitting at 5:30 a.m. East Coast time. So then at least people in later time zones have a somewhat early morning rather than just starting at 10 or whatever when we begin. But that could just be tacked on, right? And you might be able to stay up for my Dharma talk, you know, and end your day that way, or, you know, it could kind of mesh together where you guys were practicing together and times that made sense for you, but overlapped our retreat somewhat. It was a good idea.
Sounds good. Yeah. Thank you.
And there might also be not only places where you can do session nearby or participate. I don't know how different places, you know, have different levels of online access, but, you know, there's certainly more online access these days. And I encourage people to, you know, just go do session. I mean, if it's Zen, it doesn't really matter. You're just quiet the whole time anyway. So it's not like just being in three dimensions with people, and it's sweet. Encourage it. All right. So hopefully this wasn't completely irrelevant for some of you, but I feel like something of an imperative to mention. This is a very central aspect of Zen practice. Like it's probably one of the most common experiences after somebody does a session for the first time. And it's often difficult, and it's often like, oh, I don't know about this, I might have to leave. But afterwards, they often come up to me and they're like, oh, I get it now. I get, there's so much of Zen which is pointing toward this, deep experience of silence and retreat. And a lot of the teachings about emptiness and suchness and whatever are just not, we can't grasp them with the intellect. It doesn't matter how much we study. We can intuit, it's not that we make no progress, but we're talking about truths that we cannot perceive until our mental map falls away, and we are so habitually attached to our mental map of reality that it's very, very difficult to see this other aspect of reality. As I've, many of you will have heard my favorite analogy, I guess, is like you're one day you wake up and, or not you wake up, but you walk out a door and realize that up until now, your whole life, you've been in a play. And you walk out this door and you realize, oh, this is a theater and I have a role in a play. And there's a whole like world out there. That is the, evokes that same kind of like, it's completely different. Okay. What it is we're waking up to is completely different than, I mean, even though it's always been. Right. It's also like we're returning to what is true. So it's not, in a way, it's not like a separate reality. We've been within it. Right. And then we go back to our role in the play because that's our job. Right. But we do it in a very different way. We're like, that's interesting. I got kind of a tragic character in this play. All right. Well, I'll play my tragedy and do what I'm supposed to do. All right. Abiding in this ephemeral world like a lotus in muddy water, the mind is pure and goes beyond. Thus we bow to Buddha. All Buddhas throughout space and time, all honored ones, bodhisattvas, mahasattvas, wisdom beyond wisdom, maha prajna paramita.